Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is David Murphy. I represent the appellant William Poyk. This is an appeal from a judgment entered in the Southern District of Indiana by Judge McKinney, which affirmed a final decision by the Commissioner of Social Security, which denied benefits, both Social Security disability and SSI benefits, to Mr. Poyk. The case began in 2003. There was an ALJ decision which was reversed by the Social Security Appeals Council. The case was remanded to a second ALJ. The second ALJ held a hearing and, unfortunately, as the record shows, considered virtually only the evidence that was considered by the first ALJ.
I thought there was quite a bit of updated evidence, and I guess my broader question for you is, why is it our concern, as we are now reviewing the second ALJ decision, which the Appeals Council chose to let stand, why do we care what happened leading up to that if the Appeals Council itself has indicated this is our decision now? Shouldn't we just jump in and see what you have to say on the merits?
With all due respect to the Appeals Council, Your Honor, and I wouldn't characterize their motives, but what has happened here, in the opinion of Mr. Poyk, is that the perception has been generated that a poor person who is disabled by two severe conditions cannot get a fair hearing before an administrative law judge who refuses a timely filed motion for consultative examination. Mr. Poyk has no money. He is absolutely, in every sense of the word, a pauper.
No,
Go ahead. He hasn't argued that his condition has changed since his last examination.
Your Honor, I believe it is in the record that it had changed substantially, particularly with regard to the prostatitis. He testified before the hearing, or the ALJ, that he could not go to the bathroom unless he pressed on his abdomen severely, very, very hard, and had to do that about two times an hour just to urinate. He also testified, and Agnes Lavin testified, that about 30 days before the second ALJ hearing, he had what otherwise, frankly, would be called a decompensating event, locked himself in the bathroom, got extremely manic, was very hyper. And if I could, Your Honor, respond to your question, the only evidence in the record about updated medical was episodic, non-traditional kinds of contact by Mr. Poyk with Midtown Mental Health Outreach Centers in Indianapolis. There was no attempt at treatment. He went in and asked for treatment for drugs. He asked for, or rather, medical management for drugs to try and obtain some relief from his bipolar condition, but he did not have any follow-up treatment.
Well,
there's no plan involved.
Am I completely off the wall if I think from reading the briefs that his recent medical records from his treating psychiatrist, which state that his impairments were less pronounced?
Your Honor, if you're referring to the Midtown Mental Health notes, there are some comments, but they were as a result of a 5 or 10 minute visit. There was absolutely no updated evaluation of Mr. Poyk from the time of the first ALJ hearing to the second.
Well, what's the lack of any evidence that his condition has deteriorated?
The evidence of the medical point was all from 2003, 2004, and 2005. The evidence as to his mental condition, the only evidence, is the episodic contacts with the Midtown Mental Health Outreach Centers. There was no evaluation that would be comparable to Dr. Holt or to Dr. Dobbs, which were performed much, much earlier, and both of which found he was impaired and disabled.
But he didn't assert, either in his motion for the examination or at any time during that second hearing, that any of his conditions had worsened since his last exam, and he didn't identify new conditions, new impairments. I'm having a terrible time here.
It is my recollection, Your Honor, that he did assert those kinds of changes when he described how he had to go to the bathroom, and Ms. Lavin's description of the decomposition event when he locked himself in the bathroom and became manic. The problem we have here is these are sort of lay attempts at presenting what would be properly expert testimony about a medical or a mental condition, and it's not very well done, and it can't be done because they're lay people. he recognized that he had a burden under the Act to present evidence to the ALJ to support his allegation that he was disabled. But he couldn't do so because he didn't have the money to hire doctors to conduct the evaluation. That was why he asked the ALJ months before the hearing to please appoint a consultative examination. He seemed specific about what kind of examination should be taken. He identified two doctors who possibly could do it. His position is, I didn't have an opportunity, a fair, reasonable chance to present evidence of my severe impairments to the ALJ.
But it is within the discretion of an ALJ to order these mental these consultative examinations, physical or mental consultative examinations. And I guess in evaluating whether the ALJ has abused discretion in refusing to go out and get more information about somebody's medical condition, that's where we need to know what, at least from a lay point of view, was brought to the ALJ's attention.
Mr. Poik described this extreme prostatitis. He told the ALJ that he had been accepted at the Indiana University Medical School for a pilot project, but he had to pay a $100 copay, and he didn't have $100 to pay the program fee so he couldn't participate. He also told, again, Ms. Lavin told the judge about these mental incidents. Mm-hmm. And it is our position, Your Honor, Judge McKinney hit it right on the head on page 11 of his decision when he said, it's a well-settled proposition that the ALJ has a basic duty to develop a full and fair record, and ALJ is required to make a reasonable effort to ensure the record contains, at a minimum, enough information to assess the claimant's residual functionary capacity and make a disability determination. Failure to fulfill this obligation is grounds for a remand. And that's all he's saying, Your Honors. He didn't have an opportunity to present his case because of his poverty. And all he asked for was what the law allows, which is the appointment of doctors to perform the examination so that he wouldn't be in the position he found himself at the second hearing, testifying as a layperson about what should be medical testimony.
So you're actually contesting what Judge McKinney says at the top of page 13 of his order, where Judge McKinney says, and Poik provided no evidence that his condition had deteriorated. Some evidence would be his testimony, I presume.
That's correct, Your Honor. And with all due respect, I don't know how that could have gotten the record. I mean, my recollection is I was there, and I remember the testimony. Mm-hmm. And when Ms. Lavin described this incident where he was manic, I'm sure it must have been picked up.
But we do have more mental evidence. I think you've been emphasizing that there's also, at least from a testimonial point of view, evidence about his physical condition.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. The evidence of his mental condition was, again, from those outreach clinics where he would walk in and express a feeling or express something, and they would try and help him. But it wasn't part of an evaluation.
Well,
what
he
is your problem?
He was uncooperative, wasn't he? I thought he was constantly not showing up and not following through.
Your Honor, I think that's correct, and that's part of the problem with bipolar disorder.
Right.
You simply aren't capable of following much of a schedule unless there's an externally imposed discipline like a caregiver, a spouse, or somebody who can help you. Mm-hmm. If I could, I'd like to reserve a moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Alicia?
May it please the Court, Brian Alicia on behalf of Commissioner Astru. Mr. Poik essentially argues that the ALJ did not make a reasonable effort to develop the record in this case, and that his findings were based on personal dislike of Mr. Poik. But Mr. Poik has the burden on these claims, and he has a considerable burden on these claims, and he did not meet that burden.
You know, the evidence that the ALJ had before him at the hearing was at least 2 months old, and it did demonstrate a changing mental health condition. Would that be the most updated medical evidence? And when it's clear that conditions are in flux. Should it be more up to the minute? I'm not sure. I'm wondering what you're thinking.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, we have updated medical evidence from January 2005 straight through to November 2007, which was only a couple months before the hearing, as you mentioned.
But it's only on the mental stuff. It's not in the physical condition.
Well, in those Midtown notes, as recently as November 2007, Mr. Poik does state that he denied any acute distress or physical pain.
Mr. Poik, who's mentally ill, whose word we're going to take for these things. It's troublesome. I mean, all of these cases of mental illness are troublesome. And the ALJ's opinion, I found, you know, at least snippy, if not, you know, otherwise disrespectful. I'm looking particularly at the comment he makes about living on food stamps and financial assistance from his girlfriend. This is a man who's got some real problems.
Well, Your Honor, for the first issue, the district court specifically found that counsel confirmed multiple times that the record included all of Mr. Poik's available medical evidence.
But the key word there is available, because counsel did file the motion for the consultative examination.
He filed a motion for a consultative examination, but he...
So it's one thing to say, I've put everything I have in the record, quite another thing to say, and I have as much as I need.
Well, as the district court also found, Mr. Poik didn't show that his condition had deteriorated.
How was he supposed to show that without the financial wherewithal to get a medical examination? Testimony?
Well, he hadn't shown that there was an additional examination needed for the ALJ to make an informed decision. The medical evidence that was in the record showed that Dr. Holt diagnosed Mr. Poik with benign enlarged prostate. Mr. Poik also testified at his hearing that he was not taking any medication for his benign prostate. And he also testified that he wasn't taking any medication for his hepatitis.
Was prostatitis the same as benign prostate, enlarged prostate?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
They're interchangeable.
Prostatitis is the medical term for an enlarged prostate. And Dr. Holt specifically noted in November 2007 that plaintiff's prostatitis was benign and that he was not taking any medication for it. And
was he prescribed medication?
He was earlier prescribed medication, and he reported in a consultative exam that it had helped, and he also reported that once he decreased his caffeine intake, his prostatitis symptoms had decreased as well. And
do we know why he... I mean, there are cases where people don't take medication because they have no money to buy it. Do we draw the same inference that you're fine if that's the reason as we do if you just have decided not to take it anymore?
Well, in this case, the record showed that, you know, when Mr. Poik felt that he needed medical attention, he got that medical attention, specifically with regards to the Midtown records. Mm-hmm. And with the regards to the Midtown records, counsel states that treatment was episodic, but in January 2005, Mr. Poik first went to Midtown, and his file was eventually closed because he had refused to fill out paperwork. And then in 2007, Mr. Poik saw Dr. Holt on three different occasions, and he saw caseworkers as well. And during those occasions, he denied active symptoms of anxiety, depression, or psychosis. He denied experiencing any limits in functioning or in activities of daily living. And as I mentioned, he denied any acute distress or physical pain. And Mr. Poik also argues that the ALJ's credibility finding was based on personal dislike of him. However, that a claim of bias has a high burden, and there is a presumption of impartiality. Mr. Poik would have to show that the ALJ had a deep-seated and unequivocal antagonism, rendering fair judgment in this case impossible. And in support of his argument as to ALJ bias, Mr. Poik argues that the ALJ went out of his way to criticize Mr. Poik, and that the only reasonable conclusion as to the ALJ's credibility finding was that the ALJ personally disliked him.
It is damaging to the litigation process when remarks like that are made, even if they don't fall down into the cellar that you just described, because people don't have confidence in the outcome.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the ALJ did make a detailed credibility finding, and in arguing that the ALJ's credibility finding was based on a personal dislike, Mr. Poik ignores basically the entire credibility analysis that the ALJ did. The ALJ also credited a number of Mr. Poik's allegations and gave him the benefit of the doubt and included them in his RFC finding. It's the Commissioner's position that Mr. Poik has simply failed to meet his considerable burden in both his asking for an additional consultative examination and in his allegations of bias. Both of these claims have a high burden. For the additional consultative examination, Mr. Poik would have to show that the ALJ committed an abuse of discretion. And as mentioned, for the claims of bias, he would have to show that there was such unequivocal antagonism that Mr. Poik had an impossible opportunity to have a fair judgment. For these reasons, we would respectfully request that the court affirm the ALJ's decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, to briefly respond, in the record you will note that Mr. Poik was asked by the second ALJ how come he lost 40 pounds between the date of the first and the second, and he said, because I'm not eating. He doesn't have any money for food. He got food stamps. Now he's eating. He had no money for shelter. Agnes Lavin took him in. He would have been a street person. That's the bottom line. Secondly, there was another application for benefits pending, which has not really been discussed well, and I think, with all due respect, Appellee did not touch on in its brief. Mr. Poik asked for benefits under Title 2 and 16. He asked for Social Security disability, which is dependent in part upon the credits, work credits he built up while working, and would be expiring at some point in the process, and I think, as a matter of fact, he lost his insurance coverage sometime between the first and second hearing. But he also asked for supplemental security income, which is not dependent on work credits. But it is dependent on an accurate determination of the medical condition. And we're asking that his case be remanded so that a consultative examination can be performed to determine accurately what his condition is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.